keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guest, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is Stifled User Productivity and Innovation. Is Corporate IT Responsible? Our guests for today's show are Rob Israel and Zeus Caravella. Rob is the CIO with John C. Lincoln Hospitals in Phoenix, Arizona, and Zeus is the Senior Vice President of Enterprise Research with Yankee Group. Good afternoon, panel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks.
You're welcome.
So how's life and how's business? Waiting for the weekend?
Well, life in Arizona is beautiful. It's about 85 degrees right now, and it's sunny and warm outside, so we're really enjoying our early spring.
I took a trip away from Boston and got out of the cold. I'm in Northern California now, so it's a little warmer than what we've been facing with the snowstorms and stuff we've had out east lately.
I envy both of you because I'm in Chicago, still facing the winter. So thank you again for accepting the invitation on this show. And this is kind of a topic which we have all been discussing about in a shush-shush mode, but we still know that it exists, and that's what we're talking about is a parallel IT or a shadow IT for some people. And basically the topic, as it says, is stifled user productivity and innovation. What we mean by that is that we have always been trying to impose corporate IT on the user community within the organization. And at the same time, lately, especially, you'll see that the digital native consumer or digital native worker that you have in the enterprise, the young guys who know the cool techniques, tools, gadgets that they can bring and to make things done faster, they would want to use it, but corporate IT says no. And so this is going to result in a shadow IT department where they will still do it, and so that kind of breaks the rules for corporate IT, and everybody's mad. Now, given the fact that we always have this situation where consumer technology has always been taking a leap ahead of business technology, and we'll see these digital native workers always be ready to take the next steps to get their things done faster, then why is corporate IT reluctant? Why is it not supporting that cause?
You know, that's a great question, and you know, the February 15th issue of CIO Magazine actually has about a 5 or 6 page article dedicated just to that topic. And you know, from my standpoint, I think you know there's a couple different reasons. A lot of the IT senior management out there today, myself included, kind of grew up in the mainframe world where IT really had total control of everything, and users had pretty much a dumb terminal on their desk, and we were used to controlling the universe as IT goes. And I think for a lot of people it's hard to give up that measure of control. Once you have it, you don't like to give it up. But I think the other obstacle is, you know, IT is very concerned about conflicts in their hardware and their software. And oftentimes, a lot of the consumer electronics you see out there in the market that you can pick up at Best Buy or CompUSA can have a serious impact on the network or on the overall infrastructure of IT with the conflict. But I think where IT is lagging is we're not explaining that to the end user. We're not having an open, two-way conversation, talking to them, asking them what would make their job better, and then coming up with alternatives. If they want to use a iPod, we're not explaining the reasons why they really shouldn't use an iPod, but we're not giving them any alternatives either to do that mass type of storage.
Right. Yeah, I'd agree with that to some extent. I think a lot of it's cultural and user-driven. The consumerization of the enterprise is something that we've been tracking fairly closely at Yankee Group. I think historically, the way technology actually evolved was it started in the enterprise, and then you took some subset of it home. And if you think about it, PCs were first introduced in the enterprise. Not many people could afford them at home. And then, but where you look today, the value chain is only almost completely reversed, where I think it's very common for users to say, you know, I have better internet access at home. I have, you know, a better PC at home. I have you know, more tools at home with Instant Messenger and things. And so I think the innovation chain is flipped. Now, what I don't think is kept up with, though, is for a consumer to be able to integrate that device or that tool into their everyday workflow isn't that hard, because they treat it as a separate item, they treat it as a standalone application, and they almost self-manage that. And that generally is driven by the younger worker. I think for the majority of kind of mainstream workers, especially the ones that have moved up the ranks in management positions, they grew up in the world where technology was taught to you, not self-learned. So I think, you know, what you're seeing, the demand come from the younger generation, and those aren't the people making the decisions. But I think it very rapidly will become that way, and I think IT needs to really look at what they do, and I'm not saying blow up IT, but significantly change the way they operate to be able to allow faster integration of these consumer devices. But along with that does come a lot of the security and control that you have that has to be in place to have it be a viable corporate tool.
Now, aren't we not kind of sugarcoating the fact that we're saying these people want to do it faster, or they want to do it cheaper? I think what we are looking at is these guys want to be mavericks. You know, whether it's young generation or people who have learned these new cool tools, or they went to a seminar, they were given a free CD which comes with a utility which they want to try it right away at work. So it is more not, I mean, if they were working in the interest of the company, then this problem will not arise in the first place, because then they would be adhering to what the corporate principles were.
Yeah, I don't know if they want to be mavericks. I just think that in a lot of cases, the handful of users that push the technology envelope have a much better understanding of their workflow and how that technology would integrate into that. So it's not that it's trying to be mavericks. I think everybody wants to be more productive. I think there's, you know, if you think about email and instant messenger and those types of tools, those were first brought through the consumer channel, and then eventually it got integrated into corporate IT. The people using them weren't mavericks. They just wanted a different way to communicate with people. And so I think some of the things that you see today, maybe with Skype, and I've seen some companies use Slingbox, or some users want to use Slingbox as a way of distributing video, that type of technology. They're not being mavericks. They just have a different way they want to work, and that needs to be, I think there needs to be tighter integration between the line of business and IT to be able to understand why that is. So they may be perceived as mavericks, but I just think they want to do things differently.
Right, and I'd agree with you almost entirely, Zeus. In my, you know, 17, 18 plus years in IT, I've seen very few true mavericks that are trying to do something to get around, you know, the corporate structure, the corporate policies. They're just trying to improve their workflow and improve the business process altogether. And I think that's where it's important for IT to recognize that those are your innovators, not necessarily your mavericks. And that's where that open channel communication needs to come in, where you need to sit down and talk to them and find out what they're seeing out there, because IT can't be everywhere, and they don't know the work processes that people need to do. So, you know, the mavericks or innovators, you know, are the ones that are really bringing you in the technology that can drive your company forward.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example. In fact, I talked to a CIO the other day who was telling me about they just hired some college kids, and one of them asked, you know, how do I find people in the company? And they referred them to the corporate directory, of course. And the one thing the person noticed was the corporate directory had name and title, but in no way could that person actually understand what the role was. So this was a bank, and the person really wanted to know who was the person responsible for customer satisfaction for 401ks. So the user built his own wiki server on his laptop, started creating a bunch of free text information on the person. He said, the CIO told me the corporate IT kind of slapped the guy down, and then after a while they realized, you know, that would be a really good tool to have. Right, so then they brought him in and helped him design something more for the corporation. So I think to your point, it's they are your innovators, perceived as mavericks sometimes, but they should be, you know, I think with corporate steering committees and things, it should span not only different business units but different ages and different people and different functions and stuff to get as much segmentation as you can.
Would you say corporate IT is typically reactive in nature, where they learn after you see any disruption? They would just react in a very defensive way, and they'll say, okay, I need to safeguard my fort. But then when they start seeing the value, then they will embrace the same. So is that a mindset to be changed at the leadership level? Is it a mindset to be changed at that mid-level where who are basically the policemen?
You know, that's another good point. And I think it's a little bit of everything. I think IT can be very reactive and not want people to bring in innovations because, you know, quite often the IT department is buried. There's just so many fires going on, and they're being reactive to so many things. It's very hard to be proactive because of staffing levels and budget constraints. And I think one of the reasons you see a pushback from IT for those innovators or those mavericks is that they really don't have time. They have enough on their plate, and they just can't picture adding one more piece to their plate. So I think there is a lot of negative reactivity when people are bringing in things and doing it without, you know, IT leading the way or leading the charge. So I think we do shut down a lot of innovation because of those staffing levels and those many fires we're trying to put out.
Yeah, I was going to mention the firefighting. I think the firefighting level has exponentially increased over the last few years. You know, I think a lot of the mandates that have been pushed down tend to be met with almost with a lot of manual process. From a lot of the research we've done, we use a number of about 80-85% of corporate budgets, actually IT budgets, used to keep the lights on. Right, so there isn't a lot going on the new project, new development side. It's mostly maintaining the status quo in a firefighting environment. So when you have what appears to be a maverick or one user that wants to do something, it's hard to prioritize all of those requests and understand which are the ones you should focus on and which are the ones you shouldn't.
So would you say this more with less approach that has been put on IT as a mandate by corporations and then the federal mandate comes from compliance, that kind of takes way too much of their time, and in fact they are actually currently biting more than they can chew? Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if it's biting more than you can chew. I guess it is to some extent. There's just a lot more going on in technology today. I think companies look at technology as a way of moving the business forward. They look at it a way to reduce costs. They look at it to almost be the panacea to a lot of their issues. And IT's budgets have been cut. So I don't really think you can do more with less forever, right? I think eventually you got to do more with more. But we haven't seen a commensurate increase in IT budgets to accommodate, I think, a lot of what a lot of corporations want to do.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And then let's try to draw a parallel with what we see that has happened in the open source phenomena that came earlier. We were scared. We said we do not want to bring this into corporate ID because it was unmanaged and in an unstructured way to build an application or a tool or a utility. But slowly but surely, it has entrenched itself pretty much into corporate IT, and now we are confident that, yes, it is much more robust than what you can get from one vendor because there's so many people testing it. So isn't the same mindset required for us to be able to see what's the best we can extract out of this parallel IT parallel IT phenomena that we are seeing today? Let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align information technology with their business objectives through its full line of staffing and outsourcing services. Whether it's hiring top technology talent or developing mission-critical business solutions, we back it up with an unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT better. www.aval.com. Visit today. With 55 million blogs and counting, blogging is no longer just for anxiety-ridden teenagers or unemployed pundits with too much time on their hands. Companies are joining the blogosphere by the dozens. Corporate blogging is no longer optional. But how do you take your first steps into the blogosphere? On the Corporate Blogging Show, host corporate and CEO blogging consultant Debbie Weil, author of the corporate blogging book, talks in practical terms, no techie talk allowed, with some of the savviest practitioners of this new way of marketing and communicating online. Learn how you can incorporate all the newest social media tools, including blogs, podcasts, and online video, into your website, and have fun while you're doing it. Yes, this wild new weekly world of blogs is supposed to be fun. The Corporate Blogging Show with Debbie Weil, broadcast each Tuesday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel. The Corporate Blogging Show, your no-nonsense guide to the blogosphere.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's topic is stifled user productivity and innovation. Is corporate IT responsible? Our guests for today's show are Rob Israel and Zias Carvalho. Rob is the CIO of John C. Lincoln Hospitals in Phoenix, Arizona, and Zias is the Senior Vice President of Enterprise Research with Yankee Group. Before the break, we spoke about this disruption that we saw a couple of years ago about open source being brought into the corporate IT. And there was an initial rejection, big time, when they were scared and skeptical about the fact that it's unmanaged and unstructured effort, which cannot result in a good piece of software or tool or utility that can use safely in a corporate environment. But now we see that it is very well in there. Isn't the same thing happening? Are we not able to learn some lessons from what we saw? And are we not, again, blaming on this parallel IT or shadow IT and other initiatives taken on by these digital native guys within the organization as being unstructured and unmanaged, and that's why it's not safe?
Open source? I've got mixed feelings on open source. I think open source provides a tremendous amount of flexibility. I think it fuels creativity, I think in a lot of ways the custom nature of it introduces what a couple of CIOs have referred to me as employee lock-in, right? So once you get to it, if you use open source for something, generally the developers and the engineers for that particular technology tend to be more expensive than something that's a little more mainstream. And so while you get more flexibility, the support of it over a long period of time can cost you more, and one CIO described that to me as not having vendor lock-in, but having employee lock-in, and you wind up kind of beholden to the developers in that case. So, there are pros and cons, and I've always said that you don't get what you don't pay for, I think open source has its place, and I think it's more of some of the more mature areas. I don't think I'd be doing open source routing or open source voice over IP right now.
Would you not see and draw a parallel that the initial rejection that we saw, that it is outrightly not useful for corporate ID, and slowly we started adopting it when we saw things? And of course, like with anything else, like even with going with vendor-based software, you might have their own pros and cons, and we still embrace it because we need at least something. Similarly, it's more the mindset that we are trying to deal with here versus the actual technology or gadgets or tools or utilities that an end user is trying to bring to the table for corporate IT to handle. You say so? You're CIO, Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was giving some thought to your answers, Zeus, and I really parallel your comments that I do see it. I think it has some benefit, but I also truly believe that you're going down a dangerous road when you're looking at developing too much with an open source application. You're really tying yourself into that core group of programmers that are possibly truly mavericks, if you want to use the term maverick again,
yeah.
And trying to go back through and, when those people really start being able to put you over a barrel and hold your feet to the fire in terms of salaries and future benefits and their job security, that, you know, in some instances, it's a lot better to go with that, you know, that shrinkware or that vendor where you have someone big to go to and, you know, someone to have some accountability rather than a programmer you have on your staff that's doing this part-time.
Yeah, I think with open source, the community, the access to the community of developers is very important. I think if you were to look at some of the mainstream vendors, for instance, you know, Microsoft, the availability of Microsoft engineers, just go on monster.com, and it's through the roof. They're not very expensive, where a Linux developer, especially for something like, you know, SUSE, which isn't used as much as, you know, some of the other versions, you wind up paying 30-35% more for a developer. But I don't think you can draw the analogies to that in consumer technology being brought into the enterprise. I think with open source, it's a different way of doing something. I think it's a little bit more maverick a way than something that's vertically integrated and prepackaged, but it has its place. But I'd be careful on the usage of it. With bringing consumer technology in, I think that's more trying to understand how exactly I can leverage this, but secure it and control it and manage it across a wide group of users, or maybe not even a wide group of users, over just a handful of users. So I don't really see the same parallels there.
Now, when we run IT, we definitely try to make sure that any introduction of new technology or new tools, utilities, software, hardware, we do the risk assessment, etc. Now, and that is a level of healthy paranoia, if you will, that we have for us to keep a stable environment running. Now, what is the degree of paranoia should we be carrying? And then secondly, when we talk about something which is working in one way, it has not increased in efficiency over the years, it's just working the same way like a mechanic. Are we supposed to think like an engineer or a mechanic, where we are to always look at how can we further optimize our workflow or whatever tools we have today? Can we just keep them on the side, not all of them, maybe a few of them, and replace them with, say, a cool consumer tool or utility that one of your maverick innovators brings to the table, and then basically adopt it enterprise-wide, and you see an increase in optimization, increase in efficiency, so it's well worth it, right?
In ways, it is well worth it. I mean, you know, in ways, there's, you know, if taking the, you know, if it ain't fixed, don't, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality is a nice safety net for a lot of IT people to take. And as we discussed earlier, with those limited budgets and the many fires, sometimes it's hard for us to take that engineering long term approach. However, you know, I do think, you know, IT needs to be looking at all those systems and seeing if they're still appropriate for today's business needs. They need to be talking to the end users and seeing if that system that, you know, is 5 years old is still doing what it actually needs to do, because business changes very rapidly, and IT needs to stay abreast of what's changing. It's not necessary to, you know, be bleeding edge, but, you know, being close to cutting edge, you know, can give you a very strong competitive advantage in the business place. And just letting your IT system sit there stagnant because they are working and you don't have the time to go look at new innovations, I think that'll really foster that shadow IT structure out there, because people feel you don't care, you don't understand their business processes, so they're going to go out and find something that will help them be more productive and more competitive.
Yeah, I've always said that there is in a lot of people's minds, the ROI on doing nothing is a little bit too compelling to pass up sometimes, and I think what that creates, though, is a company who's frozen in place, and you know, maybe you can cut a little bit of cost out of the process itself, but ostensibly you're not actually changing the process to move ahead. Right? I think one of the big trends in the consumer space right now is the concept of leveraging user-generated content, right? And if you think about the really popular consumer websites like YouTube and MySpace and Facebook, those websites don't do anything, right? What they've provided is a facilitation mechanism to allow end users, consumers, to be able to build their own personal networks of who they want to communicate with, use the tools they want, create the content they want, and be able to communicate that way. IT has taken much more of a vertically oriented approach where they provide the tools for the users to use under IT control. And I think IT has to think of itself much more of as a facilitator to the end user to allow them to do the, communicate with who they want, how they want. You know, you might see blogs and wikis being used in enterprise more. But I think the role of IT is changing from creator to facilitator. And in that case, they're there to work with business units to continually re-engineer those processes, but have it be part of the re-engineering of the business unit that the business unit does, not as an IT initiative.
Now, when we talk about this, actually brings up an important point, is that with any time, anywhere, computing and availability of information, it seems like consumers or users in an organization are saying, give me the tools, utilities, and I will help run your business. And with that being said, user is clamoring on the door, and at the same time, we don't see corporate IT moving at that pace or even with that mindset that they will, let go of the control or the vertical mindset that we have by which corporate IT is running. So is that paradigm change welcomed by the corporate IT, or there is some paranoia because of which that is not being let go, or what's the deal going on here?
Well, I think there is a healthy dose of paranoia there, and there has to be there are some companies that I believe Bank of America is one where they will not send emails to the customers anymore because of all the incidents of phishing. So here's a case where a company isn't taking advantage of a certain technology or messaging, electronic messaging capability because of some security problems. So, one of the things that I just alluded to was the wave and the phenomenon of leveraging user-generated content. Well, if that goes unsecured and unmanaged, who knows what gets sent to what user and how that gets controlled. So I do think there is some paranoia there. I think, it's great that consumer technology is leading the way in innovation, but I think what's missing is are the big corporate IT vendors, their understanding of the consumer technology and how to integrate them in. So I wouldn't expect that to be something an internal IT department comes up with all the answers on. I think that is more something that consumer vendors and traditional corporate IT vendors have to work together on to enable that to happen better.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and we'll be right back after these messages. And let's talk about the fact that, yes, it is there. The parallel IT or shadow IT is there. It's inevitable to some extent. Now, how do we deal with it? We have spoken a bit about whether it's good to have it or not, but it's a reality today. So let's go and ponder a little bit more about what are the different strategies that can be used by IT leadership, by other business units, and wherever this exists, to keep it at a minimal level or keep it at a point where it does not risk or jeopardize the interest of the business. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back, and we'll talk more.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
April 1805. Bison as far as the eye can see. An abundance of bald eagle. Meriwether Lewis.
July 1805. We beheld a great number of antelope, deer, and elk. William Clark.
Imagine if Lewis and Clark's journals continued long past the end of their journey.
June 1905. Beaver trapped out. Buffalo herd down to a scant few.
How would they describe their trail today?
August 2005. The river is silent.
Would they be pleased?
On a more pleasant note, the new interstate certainly makes the commute more manageable.
Or would they feel differently?
Something must be done to save what's left of this great place.
As we commemorate the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, consider what's been lost and what we can do to preserve what's left. Walk with them and see what you discover at www.lewisandclark200.org.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.evol.com today. Avall is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align information technology with their business objectives through its full line of staffing and outsourcing services. Whether it's hiring top technology talent or developing mission-critical business solutions, we back it up with an unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avall can help your company, visit www.avall.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avall, making IT better. www.avall.com. Visit today.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is stifled user productivity and innovation. Is corporate IT responsible? Our guests for today's show are Robert Israel and Zias Carvalho. Rob is the CIO with John C. Lincoln Hospitals in Phoenix, Arizona, and Zias is the Senior Vice President of Enterprise Research with Yankee Group. Before the break, we spoke about the different things because of which we should or should not have this parallel IT or shadow IT exist and not have these users bring their own cool little gadgets and tools and utilities to corporate IT. But then we figured out that it is going to be there. It is inevitable, kind of a reality for us. So how do we deal with this now? Rob?
It goes back to that open communication and sitting down with the end users and finding out what they need to do their jobs properly and effectively. IT cannot know the business process of finance or, you know, accounting or receiving or shipping or purchasing. You know, we just can't know everything. We don't know those day-to-day processes. We need to make sure we get out from behind our desks and out of our offices and go out there and see what the end users are doing and what they need and what they think can improve their productivity. Our end users go to conferences for, you know, specialties in their fields, and they're talking to other people and seeing what's working in other organizations, and we need to be open to that and see how we can fit those technologies into our environment. You know, we might not be able to say yes to everything, but we can't continue to just say no, no, no because we didn't think about it. We need to sit down, find out what they want to use, what they're using at home. Is there a software they're using at home? Is there a cool widget or gadget that they got at a conference or at CompUSA that might actually be beneficial not just to the department but to the entire facility and business?
Yeah, whether you call them shadow IT departments or rogue users or whatever, I think trying to include some of those users as part of your technology steering committee actually can have a big advantage. I touched on this briefly before where I think, many companies have, there's a couple things you can do. One of them is, first of all, I've talked to some organizations where the CIO position has been rotated through the organization from different line of business managers, so it gets that position to be much more of a business one. But also in the corporate steering committees, don't limit that just to line of business managers. Actually, have it be some younger workers and some people in different fields. Maybe somebody in sales and things. I know, for instance, a company I talked to the other day. The whole BlackBerry initiative of the organization was run by somebody in sales, and then it made its way into IT. But if not for the partnership between sales and technology, who knows how that would have gone. That probably would have continued to be rogue technology. So I think the way it's technology is treated internally and the way it interacts with the rest of the organization can help not get rid of the shadow IT, but at least have a better understanding of what that group's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and I totally disagree with you about rotating the CIO position. I think that's a horrible, horrible idea. at least from my standpoint.
Yeah.
But getting those users in there, not just the line managers. That's a key success factor because the line managers, aren't even going to know the day to day ins and outs of their departments. They're not going to know what those people on the phones are doing or what they're doing on the floors because they're busy in meetings all day and they're not doing the hands on nitty gritty work anymore. So I totally agree with you. We need to get other people involved, not just managers and vice presidents and the executives of an organization.
And remember, those managers and executives tend to be the over 40s, right? And I've I've always said that the tools that mainstream corporations want to use are, you know, invented by 40-plus-year-olds for 40-plus-year-olds. So you're missing a whole subset of the user population.
Right.
Now, do you think making a few areas in IT which are more, if somebody were to use non-corporate IT-endorsed tool or utility, it'll introduce more risk? Can we make those areas as sacred and just put a corporate mandate that nobody will bring their own tools or gadgets? Do you think that fear factor would help?
No.
No? Okay.
You know, I think people will always find a way. I don't know if you ever remember the line from Jurassic Park where it said life finds a way, you know, and the dinosaurs manifest themselves. I think similarly, advanced technology will find its way into the enterprise. In fact, I don't think it's a good idea to do that. I think what you want people bringing new ideas into the organization. You want to understand how you can change process and how you can make people more productive. If that were the case, I'm not sure, you know, instant messenger would really be a mainstream corporate tool now, right? And that has allowed people to have multi-threaded conversations and scale, you know, much more than they have been in the past from a communications perspective. So I think that'd be a bad idea.
Now, would you not see that when you see federal mandates, and we really work, we don't leave any stone unturned to make sure that we comply to those, because there are heavy penalties and there's an executive management directive that comes down the pike, and that's why everybody runs after it, and we try to make sure that that mandate and compliance are in place. Now, coming to these kind of places, how come same set of people, same set of executive management folks, we cannot have a handle on this portion? Are we not serious enough about it? Or we are not perceived to be as serious about it?
Well, what's the penalty going to be, right? I think with a government mandate, the penalty for that, you know, could be jail time for the CEO and some executive, or in some cases. In the case of bringing rogue technology into the enterprise, you know, you're talking about a user that wants to make himself more productive, and I think, you know, maybe if you're looking for a reason to get rid of somebody, that could be a case. But if it's a top producing salesperson and they start using a mobile phone that isn't supported by your organization, are you really going to take punitive actions against that person? I think it'd be better to understand what exactly that person's doing with it, embrace it, and find a way to get other people to do it, rather than simply trying to slap the hand of somebody who's trying to just, you know, do their job better. Rob, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm going to partially disagree with you on there. When we're looking at some of the federal mandates that have come down in healthcare alone, and, you know, if we want to talk about the HIPAA mandates and guidelines, which could take five or six radio shows themselves, you know, we don't allow instant messaging because it's very hard for us to track what information is coming and going out of our organization with instant messaging, and we're very concerned about patient confidentiality. So a lot of people have asked for instant messaging, and we've said no, and we've actually taken steps to prohibit it on our network. And, you know, we have found a couple people that, yes, life will find its way, and they found ways around our firewalls, and we have come down on them pretty heavily. So, you know, a lot of the innovative technology that comes in isn't appropriate in some places. Years ago, there was an instance of someone, I believe, from Charles Schwab, one of the executives, sold his BlackBerry on eBay, and it contained the names and addresses and personal information of the Fortune 500. Client list.
Yeah.
So, you know, technology is great, but we do have to have mandates and controls over it. And that's where it goes back to explaining to the end user, yes, this works. It might work in another organization, but it doesn't work here, and this is why. But then you need to also take a step back and say, what else can we do to substitute something else for this?
Yeah, you know, I guess that's the main point, is you can't just say no.
You can't just say no, because if you say no, then life will find a way. And they'll figure a way around you, and that shadow IT department will be much stronger than your real IT department.
Well, you know, and when you're talking about revenue producing people, in a lot of cases, small variability in productivity can actually have in workflow can actually have a huge impact on productivity. So you could be stifling your own organization by just saying no.
Very true.
Yeah.
Now, talking about the fact that let's do a root cause analysis on this very problem, and while there are a couple of other reasons that we're not giving them enough time as IT folks, and that's why they come up with their own tools, other is to do more with less kind of mantra, and what happens is then we will be forced to say no. While corporate IT may have all the good intentions to, you know, help with any need that they may have, but they cannot. And then if that's the case, that means we are not doing something right somewhere, because at the time when we do budgeting, and nobody would come up with a tool which is so mighty expensive that we cannot buy that and make it a corporate standard if it is allowed, but still we go ahead and say no because, you know, the budget is not there. So there are some basic planning issues, it seems like, at the IT level, or the way we collect data before the budgeting actually happens for us to be, you know, planning bottom up. Thoughts?
I think that's a fair statement. I do think there are budgetary concerns. I think in some cases, though, you know, I mentioned an example of a company where sales drove the BlackBerry initiative at the organization. I think by having a better partnership between the lines of business and on IT, the budget could actually come out of a line of business as opposed to the IT department directly. And if the value proposition is strong enough, then I think the line of business would be glad to pay for it. In a previous job that I had, I worked at a brokerage firm that was heavily mainframe-based. And I worked with the equity division, and the trading desk actually was the first to use, like, true client-server computing. And they paid for all the systems and everything out of their own budget because it provided such a big advantage to them that they were willing to do that. So you'll find, I think in the areas where, you know, business is healthy and they're growing, I think in some cases those LOBs have much higher budgets to do things than the IT department does. So that's one way, I think, of managing it.
I mean, I've seen something known as, which is called planned failure. And when you are doing things, you maybe not purposely, but something which is built into the very planning process, which causes us to overlook some of the key areas, which might look small, but there could be a snowball effect, and it might come and haunt us in form of the shadow or parallel IT or in some other form or fashion. So while we can go and tell people to plan better, but then it is again subjective. What do you say?
Rob, you want to take that?
Yeah, I'm trying to formulate a good answer for that. And I don't have one off the top of my head, honestly. I can't give you a good answer to that. I mean, I'm thinking back to the budget question that we just discussed, and, you know, can IT be digging their own grave? But, you know, IT is also seen as, you know, a black hole. We don't bring money in. We spend lots of money. I'm still thinking about how you move into that proactive stage instead of the reactive stage, because we don't have that unlimited budget. The dot-com, you know, days where IT mm-hmm. salaries were going through the roof and, you know, people were throwing money at everything for Y2K.
Y2K was wonderful.
Yeah, Y2K was great. But, you know, corporate IT and, you know, corporate America is still, you know, recovering from that and just starting to invest in IT infrastructure again. We're starting to see salaries slightly change and go up again, and we're starting to see a higher caliber of IT people coming out of the schools again. But to try to get into that proactive stage and out of the reactive with a very tight, limited budget is really difficult.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's plagued IT is, and this again is where the coupling with the business units would help, is that there have been a number of technologies historically that were supposed to revamp the business and drive all kinds of productivity change and stuff, and I think the ERP systems are a good example of that, where after implementation they did not. And it wasn't an aspect of the technology. It was that changing the user behavior to use the technology in the proper way to really elevate productivity to another level was far more difficult than the IT organization thought. So, you know, trying to get the users to actually, especially the older generation, to adapt to the new stuff can be a barrier in some cases. So you might wind up in a situation where you've got a group of younger users that want a certain thing and the older users don't, and all that has to be managed as the migration goes on.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and talk about a little bit of training and awareness building that we have to have happening in these different business units so that we are unknowingly not breaching the security. We are not risking our corporate and information and intellectual property related assets. And if any sane worker who is not trying to really break the enterprise, if they understand this and they in that perimeter, they are able to bring those tools and utilities and consciously work with them, then it could literally be a non-issue. Let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at foreignlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with the mission to help companies align information technology with their business objectives through its full line of staffing and outsourcing services. Whether it's hiring top technology talent or developing mission-critical business solutions, we back it up with an unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT better. www.aval.com. Visit today.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, call toll free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's topic is titled User Productivity and Innovation. We were basically coming back from the break, and the whole idea was to talk about the training and awareness building that is very much required for the people in corporate IT and even outside for the users so that they can actually talk about what is risking the corporate or intellectual assets of a company, property-related assets, and then not bring in some outside piece of software, or tool, or utility to jeopardize that. So is that level of training actually happening? Is there an initiative pertaining to that, or is this an ongoing thing where we assume that they are trained? Because there have been cases where you go to corporate IT folks and ask them, what is your policy about this, this, and this, and they're not even fully aware.
Now, Rob can probably talk about his own specific implementation, but what I've seen generally is much of the policy being rolled out is rolled out without much explanation. So you have an internet policy that says, thou shalt not do these 10 things. And in many cases, I don't think the users fully understand why they shouldn't. I think in the, you know, if you think of the example of downloading MP3s, some people might think it's because of bandwidth considerations. Some people might think it's for virus protection. Some people might think that it's simply a productivity safeguard. So, you know, and there's probably a combination of all of those. And I think often if the proper training is done to explain to the user why a certain policy is put in place, the user is more likely to comply with it. I think in many cases, though, that the policy gets rolled out with very, very little explanation, and it leaves the interpretation of the policy up to the user himself.
Great point, Zeus. And I think it's not just the explanation. I think it's even the knowledge that the policy exists. Our organization has, you know, potentially 5,000 policies and procedures covering everything from A to Z, and you know, 100 of those might be IT related. So to expect the end users to remember what they heard in employee orientation when they first started 10 years ago, the IT environment's really changed since then, and those policies and procedures have hopefully been updated. So, you know, one of the things, you know, I do is every week I'll pick a couple policies and I'll pick out the highlights and I'll send out a did you know email or post it on our internal portal or newsletter. Did you know what this policy is about and do you know why we have it? And give an explanation so end users do know about it. But just having your paper policies out there is not enough. You know, if you have a policy and it's a policy you feel passionate about, whether it's users loading their own software or downloading MP3s or, you know, not being able to go to certain sites on the internet, you need to have, you know, automated systems in place that actually control that for you. Because if you're just relying on your policies, you might as well bury your head in the sand.
Yeah, how well are those voluntary?
Burying your head in the sand or the policy?
No, the policy. the did you know policy meetings? I'm just curious how well they're attended.
Well, the ones that we do mandatory meetings, we usually do to managers, so we don't do them to line people. The other ones, we send out emails and we do portals, updates and stuff like that on our intranet, so people are seeing them as soon as they're getting on the computer. So whether it's through an email blast out to everyone in our organization or a news article up on our portal, people are able to read it. And we also do yearly training, which is mandatory for everyone, but it's not just on IT, it's on all different aspects of our organization.
Now, I've seen companies attempt to try and wrap some sort of compensation through bonus if people go through that training and, you know, complete certain, almost like an internal certification and things to try and drive more knowledge of the policies. And but I think in some cases it isn't even part of the orientation process. So, you know, you're starting off at a disadvantage.
Right, and you know, personally, I wrote have updated most of the IT policies for our organization, and I can probably name you 10 out of the 150.
Mm.
So, to expect your common everyday end user that might use a computer once or twice a week, or a month, or even less frequently to know your policies and procedures is really not a realistic expectation.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Rob and Zias, for sharing your thoughts about what would it take for our corporate IT to make the best out of this so-called parallel IT and or shadow IT department run by digital native passionate workers that we call and who want to get things done and basically embrace them or shake hands with them and see if we can come to an amicable conclusion and kind of create a culture of controlled chaos. I think that's the best we can do given where we are. So, you know, and as we were talking about, a parallel or shadow IT department is inevitable given the resource and the compliance constraints we have and that corporate IT is also chained with for this time. Now, does it make sense to wage a war against this group? I'm not sure, but we could rather embrace them and educate them to ensure that as long as security and integrity of your corporate information assets are safeguarded, I guess it is okay for them to use the personal computing gadgets and tools in moderation. That's the key. And also it is also supposed to be a wake-up call for IT leaders to recognize that this trend, or you can say there is a shift in trend where the IT is going to be managed by the end users, or that is what they want to do. So let's open up the door of that fort that we have within closed doors. We've got big servers and try to change from a mindset standpoint, from an infrastructure standpoint. Now, what's your organization doing about handling these issues? Send us your thoughts to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. Please join Sanjog Gall next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another hour of CIO Talk Radio, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.